Well, welcome again to the Parenting is Heart Work podcast. I'm Dr. Scott Taransky, along with Elena Svetzlot, and today we are going to answer questions. We have parents who ask questions all the time, and we've just dedicated this particular podcast to the opportunity to try to respond to some of the specific needs you're experiencing right now. So, Elena, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Scott. Thank you for this beautiful introduction. Indeed, parents have questions, and especially around Christmas time, parents and children spend more time together. Well, we have been spending a lot of time together during this year, but even now more when the schools are closed. And parents want to troubleshoot issues, and they have a lot of questions for us as coaches. And the questions we have today are not the easy questions that we have received. However, we want to help these parents, and we want to give them some ideas on how they can help their children and help their families. Now, I will start by sharing these questions with you and Dr. Scott, and then we can discuss together some ideas for these parents. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, that sounds great. Go ahead. Shoot, what's the first question?
My child is 7 years old, and he is very angry. He screams when he doesn't get his way. He hits me. He hits his siblings. And nothing that I've tried seems to work. What am I doing wrong?
I love that question. You know, as I coach families, I commonly deal with the question of anger in children. And just 2 weeks ago, I had a couple who signed up for the coaching program with me as their coach. And in preparation for our first session, they sent me like 7 or 8 videos from their Ring doorbell of their son out in the front yard, tearing up the whole front porch and everything because he was so angry. And that was their question. Here's an 8-year-old boy, and he was just, so angry. And they were looking for some solutions. So I gave them a plan to start out in week one. We didn't talk about anger management. We talked about the things that this child needed at first, because there's often the tools we must build in order to deal with something like anger management. So I was very eager to what we would find at our next meeting. So a week later when we met, here's what the dad says. He says, I cannot believe the change that I've seen. In all of my imagination, I wouldn't have imagined that we could make that much change in 1 week. He says, I'm a glass half empty kind of a person, and I am still expecting the next shoe to drop here, but we have made so much progress, it's unbelievable. And so I would suggest that doesn't always happen in every family. But anger is one of those things inside of the heart, and we can bring about some major change in the life of a child using a heart-based approach.
Yeah. So, Dr. Scott, can you give us a few more details on the plan, the type of plan that you have started with this family?
Sure. What we decided was that we're going to work inside of the heart, so we're not going to use behavior modification approaches, which is reward and punishment. What we're going to do is we're going to interact in some ways that are going to we decided to start with 3 of the heart-based tools all at the same time. There are 7 heart-based tools. We decided we would start with 3 all at the same time to see if we could bring about some change. So number 1, we started with relationship building, emotional connection. I encourage dad and mom, because the relationship is different between dad and mom and their child. I encourage them both to look for ways to emotionally connect with their son. And then when they do emotionally connect, to celebrate it. In other words, make a statement that says, wow, we work really well together, don't we, as we are cleaning up the dishes together. Or I enjoy listening to you talk as mom's listening to her son tell a story. Or we sure enjoy playing games and wrestling around, don't we, dad says to her son. So emotional connection and then celebrating it. That was 1, because we're dealing with the belief system inside of a child, and we want the child to believe that dad and mom are on the same page with the child and that we all are having close relationships. So that was tool number 1.
So I really love that. It's because many parents have these challenges with anger in children. And if you think back to where is that coming from, many parents are asking that question, where is that coming from? You know, what am I doing wrong? Am I doing something wrong as a parent? And we need to realize that sometimes children have beliefs in their minds and in their heads and in their hearts that tells them that something should be on a certain way. And when that doesn't go in the way that they think it should go, they become angry and they want to establish their own their, you know, to create their own law and make it right on their own. And through that process, you get children who become angry and become rebellious, and they just don't want to, you know, they don't want to accept no for an answer, or they don't want to settle down. And for me, anger has been something which my son has also struggled at some point. And he's only 3 years and a half, but I tell you, when he gets angry, you know, he's throwing with things and he's also hitting, and, you know, he's less angry now, thankfully, because of this training that we're doing. But what I wanted to help this parent with to mention to them is that there isn't really a magic bullet that we can troubleshoot. It is a number of things that we do to work together with our children and to help them understand, just like you mentioned, Dr. Scott, a number of things and a plan we're working towards, where we can help them change their perspective, their beliefs, they, you know, and in that way we can help them deal with that anger management.
Yes, very. Let me give you the second thing I did, because the second tool was also very important in this kind of setting the framework. The second tool was visioning. So the second seven tools, we start with relationship, and then we added visioning. Visioning basically says, is a meeting that the parent has with a child that says, hey, son, we're going to help you, or we're going to work on something in your life. You're already doing well in a number of areas, but here's what we're going to work on. We're going to work on cooperation. Now, we didn't say we're going to work on anger management, because what we're going to do in the coaching program is work with the underlying issues. Anger isn't an underlying issue. It's a symptom of a problem that this child couldn't give up his agenda. Mm. He tended to view things as black and white. And he had a justice mentality that, you know, you're giving my brother something, you're not giving me, that kind of response. And so he kind of had this victim idea that if everybody else would change, I'd be fine. And he was angry a lot and he didn't receive correction well. You put all that together and you got an angry kid. So we've got to work on this in some bigger way. So I suggested to the parents that they have a vision meeting with their son and say, you're doing well in a number of things. That's the first thing we do. And you list them. Then you say, we're going to work on this and here's why. We're going to work on cooperation. It's going to help you to be a better dad someday. It's going to help you to be a better husband. It's going to help you do better at school, on sports teams. It's going to improve our relationship. You're going to feel better. And I just go through a whole list of things that are visioning kinds of things. And the third part of the vision meeting is, I'm excited. I'm excited to work with you. This is going to be great. So those three parts of the vision meeting communicate vision to a child and really sets them up with a belief system, again, that the parent is on the same side, partnering with the child, coaching the child, and we're making progress to move toward a goal. So that was my second tool I used.
And the third one?
Well, the third tool is the firmness. Now, this is where we have to establish some patterns and some routines. We, in a previous episode, talked about the instruction routine, and that was the one I felt would be best here to start with, where we've had this child practicing many times a day to come to mom when he was called and to be able to follow an instruction and report back. And just going through that cycle turned out to be really helpful, because this boy had a goal. He knew what to do. He could accomplish that. Parents could give him affirmation for his progress as he was moving forward. It clarified things. But here's what it does on the anger side. When you call a child's name and the child's involved in an activity, they must let something go. Let go of their Lego thing they're playing with. Let go of playing with their brother. They're emotionally attached to whatever they're working on, reading a book. And when you call a child's name, if they learn to let it go, that's so helpful in the whole anger management strategy. So notice, we haven't even talked about anger management yet with this client. But what I did was I started with the instruction routine, and it's preparing the basics for this child so that the child now has some of the internal tools necessary for us to come along and to then develop more of an anger management plan. But his anger is already decreasing. So it's often the case when we work on the coaching program, we don't start with anger. We start with these underlying tools in the heart that the anger problems decrease. So I was thrilled. Dad was thrilled. He was excited for week two material, which we then went into, because we got to keep things moving. We got 8 weeks. We got a lot we can do in this boy's life. We don't want to stop just because he's doing well in 1 week. Lots of things we're going to do to help him with his anger.
Such a blessing. Really, really good to hear. And I would say to all parents who have children who are struggling with anger and, you know, all other behaviors that are related to anger, I would say follow the steps that Dr. Scott has here shared with us. And please don't underestimate the power of practicing and the therapy, doing this continuously with your children, teaching them to come unanswered, making them practice a few times a day to follow instructions, even when they don't really have, you don't really have a certain instruction to give them, but let them practice coming when you call them, following an instruction, going through all the steps. It's such an important step and such an important area to focus on, I think.
Yeah, let me just say that I don't believe that every child needs to come when called every time. But remember, here's a child who's got an anger problem. So in this case, he does. In other words, he needs to learn how to give up what he's doing and not negotiate, say, wait a minute, or have a better idea. Because the problem is he tends to get fixated on what he's doing and can't let it go. And that's part of his anger problem. So in this case, we're using this instruction routine we generated for the coaching program to help this child do therapy. And so parents are doing therapy with them at home to bring about change on a heart level.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Scott, for that. And we will move to the next question. Here is a mom, and she says, I am at the end of my powers. My daughter is 16 and she is defiant. She ignores my instructions, and when I give her consequences, she doesn't care. What can I do?
All right. So when we're dealing with an adolescent, we have to realize several things. There are three stages of adolescence, first of all. The first stage is emotionally driven decision-making. Goes between the ages of 12 and 16, give or take 2 years, and is characterized by this emotionally driven kind of behavior where children are moody, they get involved in risky behavior, they have bad attitudes, they do what they want to do, they don't do what they need to do, and all of that emotionally driven activity is dangerous, and so it's very important, and this girl is likely still in that first stage of adolescence. And in that first stage of adolescence, we need more parental control. So we have to establish some guidelines and some boundaries and some instructions in order to move forward. But we have to have a plan in place for when the daughter's not responding. I can tell you about the plan we put in place for a daughter who's not responding, who's 16 years old. But sometimes parents rely so heavily on that that's what they use for training. And I think that's a mistake. We still need to have meetings with this 16-year-old. We need to talk about where we're going and the things that she's doing well and talk about her strengths and all the things we can do that are positive. And we're going to talk to her about a weakness she has by being resistant. And we're going to ask her for advice in the sense that we might say, I've never raised a Mary before. If you have some ideas about how I could do this better, I'd like to hear it. So we have this kind of cooperative, humble approach. If she says, leave me alone, then we say, I can't do that. I have a job to do as a dad or as a mom. And that is, I need to give you instructions and we need to get things done around here. I need to monitor you and sometimes correct you when you're off track so you can grow. And thirdly, I need to set limits. All of that's really important. So that's kind of this communication idea, setting the perspective again. We need to establish some boundaries and some firmness with this young lady. And they need to be directly tied to her, to the privileges. Basically, it's this idea that if you want the privileges associated with this family, you need to abide by the principles that make this family work. And that means, one, that we deal with conflict. And that means, two, that we cooperatively have meals together sometimes during the week. Maybe you want to say that we go to church together, or in this case, you might even say, and one of the things we're going to require of you is that you have been counseling if you want to do that. So the point is, there are certain things that are required in your home. And in order to enjoy the privileges of being home, which is enjoying an internet or a bedroom or anything like that, you need to be able to enter into a cooperative relationship. Now, that's kind of the general map of where we're going. The daily interactions then are going to be really important. So coming in and saying to her something like, honey, it's your turn to do the dishes. Would you please come and do the dishes now? Okay, so the daughter says, no, I'm not doing the dishes today or something like that. And so it's in those meetings and we have to be very careful about how we handle them. So I do think we need to establish then what kinds of things does this girl enjoy doing that we may have to limit or take away privileges. But when we do that, we don't do it like a justice mentality. You did this, so you deserve that. But we do it in a way that says, I want to give you privileges, but if you're not cooperating, you can't have those privileges, such as a bedroom or such as a access to the internet or the freedom to go out. I mean, you just can't have those things unless you are cooperating. So that's using a more firm approach when we do that, which I think is fine. There's a lot of good ways to work with a child, but firmness is helpful. Building relationship is important. Trying to appeal to a child's conscience. There's all these tools that we use in the coaching program because we don't know exactly what's going to work. And so we try some different things and then we capitalize on some things that work and we then start to move this child more towards something. We're moving toward cooperation or we're moving toward responsibility or something that we're trying to help her develop in her life.
Yeah, one of the first thoughts that came into my mind when I heard this question was that definitely understanding what type of relationship is between this girl and their parents and what is it can be her personality, but perhaps there is something else that's causing this pushback, strong pushback. And I would definitely advise the parents to open their hearts to the daughter and have a meeting and have multiple meetings and explain how challenging is for them to build a relationship, to get close to her if she's continuously pushing them away, and that open themselves to them, that they are willing to change and they can do it together. And indeed, when things are going challenging and this is not working, looking at how we can use firmness. So absolutely agreed with you, Dr. Scott, in almost everything you said. It's so important to look at things as a plan, and also some things will work, some things won't work. So I would advise these parents, why don't you read a book, Motivate Your Child by Dr. Scott Turansky, and you will find some more ideas there.
Yeah, I think that book is helpful. Keep in mind that when we're trying to help children change, some children don't respond real well to dialogue. So I do think it's important to talk to children about these things. But in the end, it's the firmness that often is what teaches the character. So knowing how to be firm without being harsh is a very important skill. I think it's very valuable to doing some teaching as part of your component that you're trying to help these children learn. So a lot of things can go on here. Also keep in mind that we don't have to solve the problem in the moment. Sometimes we come and we confront a child and say, you need to do this now, and the child doesn't respond well. That doesn't mean we have to escalate and be yelling and be angry with a child. Sometimes we pull back for 5 minutes, come back and say, hey, I told you need to do this now. You need to come and work on it. And so we can do this in a way that sometimes allows time to be part of the discipline process. And sometimes children will soften in that regard. So yes, there's a lot of components here. And I agree with you, Elena, that sometimes parents need to evaluate themselves. They need to try to kind of figure out what's going on here, because when parents yell at children, it just makes things worse. So we've got to have some plans that don't require yelling. Firmness is important, and having being able to act and do whatever you're going to do, is going to be helpful, so we don't have to rely on yelling in order to get things done.
Yeah, and I think at 16 years old, a girl is quite, it's quite mature to understand something. So yeah. I just wanted to say that we appreciate all these parents who are going through so much struggle, and they are so relentless in their hope and in their work to help their children and help their families. I just always have such a high esteem, and I really appreciate all these hardworking parents who are trying to look for ways and ways to make it better for their kids and for their families.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Elena. And the reason I do is because sometimes when we do question answers or we do a short podcast about a subject, it can give the impression that we think, well, parenting is easy. Just do what we say and you won't have challenging children. But children do have significant challenges. And knowing how to work with them is a challenge. Proverbs says that the heart is a deep waters, but a man of understanding draws it out. And we want to be that man or woman of understanding that draws that out of our kids, so that we can be more effective in working with them. So our goal is to give ideas and tools and strategies to equip parents with the ability to work with a child and bring about some significant change.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Scott. So let's move on to the next question. We have been working from home for a while and we get to spend more time with our children, which we love. But I notice that I have less patience with them, especially when they make mistakes, and I tend to get upset and angry much faster. Do you have any suggestions to help me?
Okay, that is a really good insight that mom has. And what she's doing is she's pointing to her own lack of patience. And that's good, because I would suggest that when a parent feels angry, there's usually something going wrong in the child. Anger, that's just what one of the things that anger does for us is it points out something's wrong. So let's use anger as an advantage, not to use anger to solve the problem, but to use anger to identify a problem. Because when you feel angry or upset about something, there's likely something wrong going on with this child. Now, I would suggest when we feel angry, it's because a child is doing something that's wrong and you need to have a plan for each area. For example, child doesn't respond well to following instructions. You have to tell the child over and over again, or the child argues with me and so on. When that takes place, you need a plan. What's the plan going to be? We would suggest go into the instruction routine and use it as therapy to practice developing cooperation. If your child has a problem being mean to his brother, well, that child needs a plan. What's that plan going to be? We would suggest that plan is something like the honor therapy work that we do, so that a child can start developing some more ability to value others, not just value herself or himself. If the child can't receive correction, always argues when you try to correct him, then we need a plan. We need a plan for dealing with the humility and taking responsibility for oneself. I mean, each time you feel angry, it's because your child is probably acting out in a way that demonstrates a weakness that needs a plan. And so, I wrote a book called Good and Angry, Exchanging Frustration for Character in You and Your Kids. I wrote that book with Joanne Miller, and it's got 8 chapters in it, and each chapter takes one of these problems and says, okay, look at your anger. Your anger is good for identifying problems, but not good for solving them. Let's develop a plan. So we have each one of these chapters is dealing with a different problem that parents have with their kids to say, okay, let's develop a plan. If parents have a plan, then they don't have to use anger to solve problems. But parents who don't have a plan often do use anger to solve problems. So we must help parents with more strategies and plans. And so we continue looking for ways that we can do that in children so that we can move them forward and out of their current strategy and problem they're addressing.
Yeah, that's a very complete and thorough advice, Dr. Scott. And I was going to come at this question from a bit of a different perspective. I mean, we are parenting coaches, but what came to my mind when I heard this question was, you know, how can we as parents, when we're going through hard times, maybe work is busy and maybe we just have very limited patience because of other aspects of our lives, how can we keep and maintain our calm even when children become difficult? And I can give you the way I manage it. And because we were also working from home, I would say that for me, what helped is to pray and to really every day read the Word of God and remember and remind myself that we are all under the grace of God and we are all sinners and we are all making mistakes every day in one way or another. And God is gracious and forgives us. And that just, I keep reminding myself that. And the other thing that helped me, and this is just in my way, is just to sometimes exercise and, you know, and I know this is not really close to what we're focusing this on this podcast, but I wanted to just give these ideas to parents. I know it's hard for some parents who might be stressed because of work or other things.
Those are great ideas. I think exercise is very important for children and for parents because it helps them on a lot of different levels. Biologically, it does something to you when you're exercising. It helps you deal with stress more effectively. And it's certainly true that when we're all in the same house together and don't have the same opportunities to get out, that the stress level increases. So having ways to address that is strategic. That's good.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay, well, let's go to our next last question. My son is 17 and he lies a lot about small and big things. I don't understand why. What can I do to stop this?
All right. So he's 17 and he has a problem lying. Well, why? Ultimately, all people sin because they have a sin nature. So that's ultimately why. But in this case, it sounds to me like his conscience, he doesn't value his conscience enough to have integrity in order to tell the truth. And so that becomes a significant weakness in anybody, that they're willing to lie in order to take a shortcut. So lying is a shortcut that a person takes in order to get something they couldn't get otherwise, or to get out of trouble, or to look good or something. I mean, people have an objective when they lie, or they become a habit of lying in order to get something out of that. So it's a problem. Now, there's a lot of things that we can do to help a 17-year-old who's lying. One of the things we can do is hold them accountable more, so that we are removing some of their privilege. Let's say a child has a problem with a cell phone and misusing it. I would certainly say at 17 years old, we may limit that cell phone, might even take it away. I know that's hard for to do with a 17-year-old, but if a 17-year-old is not handling the privilege of a cell phone well and getting themselves into danger in various ways by being sneaky or doing the wrong thing, then certainly limiting the cell phone would be a wise thing to do, or computer use or whatever it might be. So putting limits on, holding a child accountable, accountability is very important. If we're going to strengthen the conscience inside of a person, it means that they develop a greater sense of duty, or feeling uncomfortable when they're posed with the opportunity to lie or steal or be mischievous or to somehow be sneaky or something else like that. So we're working with a child to help them grow in this area. Lying is a very difficult problem, because sometimes you don't know whether they're lying, and sometimes they lie and cover up a previous lie. And so it gets to be rather complicated. So I think we need a multifaceted approach here to deal with lying that often involves higher accountability, some teaching in this area. If a child's responsive spiritually, I think that's important as well. Be able to tie into just the Holy Spirit's work inside of a person's life who's lying. So we're looking for lots of different tools. We don't know exactly which one's going to work, but we're not content to continue to live in an environment where lying is taking place. By the way, one of the hardest things for a person who lies to admit is that they lied. So I think there are times when you say, "Oh, buddy, I know that you're lying. I saw you do it right there. Okay, I was here and it happened." There are a lot of times we don't know whether it was a lie or not. We just know something happened. We think it's this child. We think the child's lying. But sometimes when we do know, we can say, "Look, I'm sorry. You're stuck. Okay, until you can say I lied, you are not free to go forward." And that's very, very hard for a person of any age to do, is to admit they lied. So you may be able to use that as you're trying to work with a child to bring about some sense of integrity. Just the very fact that it's hard to admit that you lied means that a child values the truth and doesn't want to be perceived as someone who lies. That's a pretty strong statement. And so making a big deal out of it occasionally like that can go a long way to motivate a child toward more integrity in their lives.
Yes. Very, very thorough advice, Dr. Scott. I would say, if I may add a few things, is that I would say that definitely having a conversation and speaking with this child about why are they afraid to tell the truth, and why, you know, obviously they're afraid of the consequences, or perhaps they just don't realize the trouble they're causing when they're lying. They don't realize that enough to actually stop. But indeed, all the approach we're, all the approaches we're taking in all the different facets are going to play an important role in this. So thank you so much, Dr. Scott, for your answers. I think that many parents will benefit from this. And if you have questions, we do suggest that you're listening to all the episodes of this podcast, and please go ahead and go to find Dr. Scott. You can go to biblicalparenting.org, and you can find there more things about his ministry and all the books that he has written and the resources he has there. And for myself, you can find me on elenajvetzel.com, and you can follow us on all social medias. Thank you very much for your attention, and until next time, Dr. Scott.
Very good. Hey, it's great to be interacting about parenting, and I look forward to the next time we can get together.